welcome back to Straight Up. We hope you're all doing very well this week. It's a rainy Monday evening, but we're here. We've got some seriously juicy stuff to debrief on today.
Yes, we do.
But first, Els.
Hello.
Ellie Halls, best friend and fellow podcaster. Just to reintroduce you, to reintroduce myself, Kathleen Johnston. Hey, honeys, it's Els again. What did you get up to in New York? Give me the blow-by-blow.
Well, so New York. Okay, so listeners, get out your notes app or a little pen and paper because I have actually written a list that
we will also put in the show notes.
We will put it in the show notes, but in case
should you not have a pen to hand?
Should you not have a pen to hand? I'm going to whiz through them because lots of people go to New York. I think it'd be really useful to just have a little whistle stop tour.
Defo.
So I recommend staying in on the Lower East Side, if you can, or Midtown. I actually stayed in Midtown this time, but my boyfriend used to live on Lower East Side, which was very convenient.
I loved staying in Brooklyn.
I do love Brooklyn.
But if you're going to New York for the first time ever, then definitely stay in Manhattan because you want to have the proper NYC experience.
Yes. Or Williamsburg is maybe a bit closer.
That's in Brooklyn. That's where I stayed, at the Williamsburg. It was really nice.
Oh, actually, I love the Williamsburg. It's cool. So nice. Okay, so in terms of where to go, I went to Gotham Comedy Club, which was really fun. I really wanted to see some stand-up comedy just to see what they were all talking about in New York, because I think comedy is quite a good way to get the pulse of a city.
And was it good?
It was so good. I have to say, whenever I see stand-up in the UK, I often go to Top Secret Comedy Club in Covent Garden. And it's just they're a bit rusty.
Yeah. You know me, I hate stand-up. So,
do you?
Yeah.
Why?
I just find it really annoying and not funny.
Interesting. Yeah. There were four of them. I'd never heard them before. And each one was amazing, so slick. And they were incredibly provocative. One of them had a paedophile skit that went on for 10 minutes, and each time I thought he was gonna get rinsed or booed off stage, but he just kept going with it. And I think that might be the difference between UK and US comedy. I think in the UK, if I'd heard that at the Top Secret Comedy Club, they would have just stopped.
Yeah, is that what happens? If that happened in London and it was a provocative topic, would they get booed off stage? Is that a thing?
Well, I remember going to one where it was just after the London stabbings on London Bridge, and someone made a joke about the people that had died, and everyone made very much clear that it was not a good joke, and he just stopped and was okay, this is not for everyone, okay, I get it, and just moved on swiftly.
But I do feel that's a bit different, because it's not just a broad taboo subject, it's a deeply personal thing for London, and he's doing the stand-up in London. Do you know what I mean? That geographical specificity, I think, makes it a little bit more unacceptable.
Yeah. So recommend going to see some stand-up. Recommend going to the book club in East Village, which is an amazing little cafe / bookshop where I just sat for hours every day and read a book. Ooh. Read Home Fire, which you recommended to me.
Oh, did you enjoy it?
So good. Also very relevant with the Shamima Begum stuff going
on. It is, isn't it? Even though it came out 7 years ago or something.
It's basically a young man who gets radicalized in London and then goes off to become a jihadi, and whether he's allowed back home, and that's the whole drama. Anyway, so other than book club, I also recommend going to the Sex Museum in Midtown, which I went to when I was quite drunk, which is quite fun, but it's actually also quite clever. It looks at how, for instance, advertisers use sex to promote their brands, and looks like the first Playboy magazine, and it's actually quite a cerebral look at sex, but also quite naughty. I've never seen so many dildos and blow up dolls. Then in terms of restaurants, I recommend Lafayette for brunch. It's quite an Instagrammable place, but so good. Had the best lemon ricotta pancakes. Also Missy in Brooklyn for pasta. You must have the brown butter pasta. It was amazing. Mm. And Sunday in Brooklyn. Did you go there, babe, when you were in Brooklyn?
No, I didn't actually. But I remember seeing it everywhere.
It's an amazing American diner
style. People have to queue, right?
Yes.
And that's what put me off.
Well, actually, we just put our names down and then went to the Williamsburg Hotel for a drink and then came back. You must have the hot fried chicken sandwich and...
my favourite.
Yes, so good. And the best cocktail ever, Ski Lift, which was bourbon, peanut butter, coffee, whipped cream and sprinkles.
Oh, wow.
It was delicious. Have it as
warm
a dessert.
Or cold?
Warm. So gorgeous.
Nice.
And you must get a bagel from Tompkins Square Bagels. I went every day for 4 days in a row and had the same order. And then by the end of it, the guy was like, do you not want something else?
What were you ordering?
A terrible American accent. A sesame seed toasted bagel with peanut butter.
Oh my God, that is so bland. And that's coming from me, the queen of bland.
You could get
I thought you were at least going to say cream cheese and smoked salmon. And even then I was going to be oh, I kept things simple and classic.
I just love peanut butter. And in America, they have like Skippy's peanut butter, which is really sweet. I love it. Yum. But yes, I was, but also just put me off looking at all, they have like blueberry cream cheese and like espresso cream cheese. And
why are there so many different types of cream cheese? I like the one that has like the little spring onions in it, which I'd never had until I went to New York.
I know I should have tried on the cream cheese ones, but you know when you're like, I know I won't like it, so what is the point?
Yeah.
Let me just stick with what I know. Okay, and finally, onto bars. You must go to Dante in Chelsea. They have a happy hour from 3 till 5 p.m. $10 martinis. They're known for their martinis. It was very classy, very chic. And Little Ned Cocktail Bar, which has just opened in Midtown. Such a gorgeous little, like, very plush, very low-lit cocktail bar. Had an amazing old-fashioned...
Is it at the Ned?
It's down the road from the Ned for some reason. Right. It's like...
But it's like, belongs to
them. But it's part of the Ned.
Right, yeah.
But much nicer than any bar that you would find in the Ned, I think. But it did make me think as well that, like, oh my God, like, the bar scene in the UK just does not compare. Like, there's something about New York City lighting. Everything is low lit. Everything has exposed brick. Everything looks nice and cool. And people are cool. The music's cool. And I don't know. I just feel like there's not that equivalent in the UK. There aren't so many bars as well. You can literally, like, go bar hopping in New York in a way that you can't here. You'd have to, like, find your bar, go to it, and then get, like, the tube to the next one.
Also, I didn't really realise how many places are actually chains. So even the other day, like, when we were in New York together in 2019, we went to Beauty in Essex. Totally did not realise that there's more than one of them. Millie Bobby Brown just had her 19th birthday at the one in LA.
Oh my God.
I know. And she looks really old, I've got to say, in the picture. I couldn't believe it.
She
looks stunning, but wow. She's wearing this like tiny little bralette and like tiny little pants and like heavy makeup. And
I'm paging like, Drake.
Real woman. Also, did you know that she had a beauty brand? Because I literally didn't until today.
Yes, I did.
I don't know where I've been. I had not clocked
She's
that.
Had it for years. I remember thinking like 2 years ago, like, wow, why do you have a beauty brand?
It's got like literally nearly 4 million followers on Instagram. So it's obviously rather
But I remember
successful.
Watching tutorials of her putting it on, and it was like, you're literally not putting on you're not even putting it on in your tutorials. And people kept noticing that. Also, if you do go to Beauty in Essex, go downstairs to the toilets because they give you free Prosecco in the ladies. Yeah, women's ladies in the ladies. Okay, that's my whistle stop guide.
Oh, well, that sounds lovely. Glad you had a nice time.
Thanks, babe. If anyone does check out any of my recommendations, let us know.
Yeah. Did you watch any good films on plane?
I watched Idris Elba's film The Beast, where he attacks, where he basically like hunts an evil lion that kills all the villagers and all the poachers.
Oh yeah, what was that like?
Well, I think you'd like it. It's a kind of
my kind of film.
I liked it. I love watching like nature fights back kind of films. I love watching like massive animals like being cool, essentially. But it's a shit film. But it's a great pain film. Also, what did I watch on the way? Oh my God, I watched Avatar for the first time.
The number one.
Which is ridiculous because if you're gonna watch Avatar, tiny little screen. Watch it on the plane, yeah. But actually I found it so at first I found it kind of lame.
Oh, it's great.
Well, at first I was like, this is just so like right on and like, ooh, colonialism and like, oh my God, nature. And I was like, this is so unsubtle. And then by the end I was like, these fight scenes are really cool.
Yeah.
And it's really making me cry.
Also, it was quite radical at the time. Like now it's like a very obvious like metaphor.
I think,
but
yes.
No one else had really done that then, I don't think.
I think, well, when was it?
People weren't really talking about neocolonialism in like the mainstream sphere.
Yes. I think now it just felt too obvious and too unsubtle, but you're right. It was probably amazing at the time. And I did, and the idea of the guy being able to walk again because he didn't working legs, I thought that was really moving.
I really want to see Avatar 2, but I also really don't want to give up 3 hours of my life to sit in the cinema.
Absolutely not. That, yeah. I mean, the only reason I watched that is because I was on the plane and I was like glued to my seat, unable to do anything. But we got upgraded on the way back. That was
oh my God. So are you? Great. That's like one of those things you hear about and I didn't believe actually ever happens to anyone.
Well, because my boyfriend has a silver card with BA because he obviously travelled so much from New York back to London when he lived there. They only upgraded us to premium economy, but I will say, having also once flown business when I was flown out to interview P. Diddy and Naomi Campbell for the Pirelli calendar, there's not that much difference between business and premium economy apart from space.
But in premium economy you can't lie flat.
No, you can't
lie flat. I feel like that's like the number one big difference. Like, you don't have a bed.
Yes,
you're still sat
true.
In a chair.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. I guess I didn't mind that too much.
Such a short flight on the way back from New York as well.
That's
the thing.
Hours. But in terms of the food and drink, I think it's basically the same.
Yeah.
So yes, that was my experience. How did you?
How cute.
Did you have a nice weekend?
I had such a nice weekend. I was like busy with all my gal pals basically the whole weekend, which was great.
What did you do?
Really fun. Went out for some drinks, went to the pub. My friend hosted us all for a dinner on Saturday. Just that kind of stuff.
I did
very
see a
cute.
Picture you wearing that very nice red dress.
That I'm wearing in our old straight up pics, yeah.
I did notice that.
Just an oldie but a goodie that. And other stories.
Ooh, lovely.
Really easy. Anyway, I want to talk all about the Peltz Beckham wedding fallout, guys, because that has basically been my favourite talking point from the past week.
And also, we've been wanting to talk about Nicola Peltz for now, like, 2 months.
I know, and then we just kept forgetting. And then now, Perfect Peg. Have you seen what's actually happened? Do you want me to give you a little blow-by-blow?
I literally haven't seen. Tell me.
Okay, so you guys probably all heard the rumours last year that Brooklyn and Nicola Peltz-Beckham, when they got married in April 2022, there was a lot of drama. Now, after Nicola's father, Nelson Peltz, filed a lawsuit against the two of the wedding planners, which was last year, they've now filed back a countersuit of their own for breach of contract, which basically has brought all the intel to the surface about like what was really going down at the time. So basically, the two wedding planners were hired just 6 weeks before the wedding, and then they were let go after 9 days because Nelson said that they basically just didn't have like the capabilities to deal with such like a high profile celebrity wedding with so many dignitaries and athletes and famous faces all coming to it, like massive guest list, you know, with 600 people on it. And he never got his like £140,000 deposit back, which is why he's suing. The wedding planners are basically saying that the family were awful with communication and they made loads of difficult demands in short notice, and they included like loads of text messages between Nicola and the planners where she's just being a massive bitch, basically. I don't know how else to put it.
Okay, I know this is really mean and makes me sound like a cow, but doesn't she just look like a bitch?
Oh yes, definitely.
Like there's something about, and bear in mind this is not her real nose, she's had it done, but there's something about the upturned nose.
Yeah,
that makes you snooty. Look like a snooty cow.
She looks like a snooty cow.
And
she actually
and
does.
And the pout, like, I'm sorry, but you, do you smile ever?
Yeah. And also, like, my God, I actually saw something really funny the other day. I can't remember where it was. I'll have to have a look and put it in the show notes. Someone did a piece about how, like, Big Vogue has been, like, desperately trying to make, like, Nicola and Brooklyn happen. And they literally cover them, like, every other week with some kind of video about the couple. But still, no one cares. Quite funny. I'm going to have to find
funny. They sound like the lamest 23-year-olds ever. How old are they? I mean, they're like, my favourite thing to do with Nicola is to stay in and put on face masks.
Oh, they're so lame. Like he said the other day, his quote, someone asked them about like having children and he was like, I would have had kids yesterday. I'm like, yeah, of course you would, mate, because you have like literally nothing else going for you.
And also, I know this is meant to be cute, but him constantly putting pictures of my wife heart emoji
and
on
like,
his
love you
grid.
My baby, like you literally look like a sycophantic obsessed loser, you need to stop. So basically there's like hundreds of WhatsApp messages that they've included in the lawsuit, and they said that Nicola was making all these like crazy demands but kept saying that she was too busy to speak on the phone, so she would only discuss over message all of this like various stuff that had to happen for the wedding. And they also said that apparently the Peltzes were like terrified about Victoria Beckham finding out about any of the mistakes in the planning, including the guest list, so they like swore the wedding planners to secrecy to like not let Victoria Beckham know. So the filing reportedly said both Claudia, who's Nicola's mum, and Nicola had insisted that Victoria Beckham could not know about any internal mistakes regarding the ongoing planning of her son's wedding, including any errors with the guest list. Another point that they brought up is that basically Nicola's hair and makeup cost $100,000, just her hair and makeup.
Sorry, how?
How is that even possible?
Just,
I don't know.
Unpack that for a second. Does that mean,
like, how could it possibly be that?
Is it the labor? Like, the makeup artist was so sought after, she had to be flown over.
It
from,
must
like,
be that.
Hawaii.
It can't be the actual products they're using, unless they also shipped in, you know, like loads of like, you know, chirotherapy chambers and like God knows what else. But I'm sure the Peltzes
like
would have that stuff.
Vampire blood facial.
Yeah,
like,
but I think the
Peltzes penis.
Would have that stuff at their £76 million mansion, you know?
That is absolutely absurd.
Isn't it?
I mean, also, wouldn't you be embarrassed that your face needed £100,000 worth of treatment before your big day?
I just don't understand how, and so Claudia, Nicola's mum.
Wait, sorry, I keep thinking about how much that is. That's
yeah,
just absurd.
But apparently the wedding planners were asked by Nicola Peltz's mum, Claudia, to hide it from Nelson, her dad, the billionaire who's obviously paying for it all, because otherwise he was going to be like so mad and angry. So they asked the wedding planners to like lie about how much it was costing, because if Nelson found out, he would have like flipped a lid.
Wait, so what? So he just doesn't notice the 100K?
Well, he has now, obviously, because it's like one of the things that's being brought up. But apparently, I think I literally read somewhere that the wedding costs like, I want to say 3 million, but it might have even been 300 million, but surely not. That's insane. It must have been 3 million.
Do you know what? For some reason, that doesn't seem like a big number for the entire wedding. I thought it'd be more. If you're going to spend
£3 million on one day, when like the poshest wedding you could ever really comprehend would only cost like 300K. 3 million.
No, you're right, actually.
Like what could, and they did it at their own home.
I just feel like if makeup can cost 100,000.
Yeah, yeah,
then
no,
like,
you're right. Like they're like, but I would have thought she would have got her dresses for free, but maybe not, Valentino. Apparently one of the messages from her reportedly read, so I think you were pretty bang on with the snooty bitch comment. This is not why I asked for then in caps. I asked for our invite list. IN, full stop, VITE, full stop. Not full stop, RSVP, full stop. Can you manage to send that to me? And then another one. I don't want it to be so complicated. I just want a list. Please, in capitals.
Did she write please or please?
She wrote please, but in caps. So it's got that passive aggressive thing going on.
You cannot caps message people.
And then when Becca messages on the group chat calling the guest list a mess, Nicola allegedly replied, oh my God, more like, again in capitals, a murder scene.
What is wrong with these people?
Literally. Nicola apparently objected to the floral arrangements not being white enough. Responding to a picture of peonies and cabbage roses, she apparently said, they should be more white. I didn't realise the second picture of roses were cream. She reportedly disliked the suggestion of to have Brooklyn and Nicola burgers served at the wedding. Brooklyn was reportedly keen on having a double or single burger as a Brooklyn burger and a Nicola burger with no bun and lettuce instead of a bun and meat for the girls.
Wow.
Oh, come on, Brooklyn.
What a metaphor for Nicola's personality.
Yeah, oh, no wonder she was like, we're not having the burgers.
Meatless, bunless.
Yeah.
Wait, is there no meat or bun?
Sorry, so... It was just meat and lettuce, no bun, for the Nicola burger.
Sounds a bit like the breadless bread
plate. Yeah. And then reacting to the idea of calling one of the burgers Baggett like Beckham, Nicola allegedly replied, these names are embarrassing.
Well, on that, she is
correct. She is correct.
You can bet Brooklyn found it really funny and definitely would have allowed that.
Loved the idea of the burgers. He probably thought it touches on his chefy credentials. Yeah, so the wedding planners basically just said that Nelson was like a billionaire bully. And
who are these wedding planners? Are they
they're
women?
Called, to be honest, I literally don't know their name. They're like a duo. Braghin and Grijalba, I think.
Is it Icelandic?
I doubt it. Maybe. And it's quite funny because obviously the Nelson Peltz like lawsuit is like going ham on bigging up who they are. So it describes Nicola as a world famous actress who has starred in blockbuster movies and television shows. It's like stretching it a bit there.
As a culture editor of a newspaper, I can tell you I have never seen her on screen. She's directing a film and shot Brooklyn in a scene and then cut him out.
No.
Yeah, because there's a...
That is too good.
In the Times interview, she's like, haha, yeah, I did. He insisted on being in it and I did shoot him, but no, it's coming out. I bet she's high maintenance in there.
I bet you she's serious high maintenance. And it did not go unnoticed, did it not? When they did get married and Victoria posted like, congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Beckham, just completely ignoring their double barrel name request. And she's like, yeah, I'm just not going to use that.
That's hilarious.
So funny.
Do we think Victoria Beckham's a nice person?
Oh, so a little bit of intel for you guys. Allegedly, just in case I get sued, I once met, maybe I've said this on the podcast before. If I have, sorry, can't remember. I have once met one of the Beckham's nannies. She
have
was
you?
Really nice. Yeah, she's a friend of a friend. And I was actually at Sonar with her randomly.
Wow.
In Barcelona a few years ago. And she was Australian. She'd come over to the UK and had been doing like high profile nannying. I think maybe had worked for a different family before and then was on the Beckham's roster because they have like a rota of nannies because they're never without a nanny, if you know what I mean. So like when one of the nannies is off, someone else is there because of all the travel they do and yada, yada, yada. But she did say that what she gathered from being in their home was that actually, A, they're both like really lovely people, but B, that even the kind of gossip about their relationship was kind of like unfounded and that actually they like very much really in love.
What? So
still
she doesn't
in the same
have a secret
bedroom.
Boyfriend?
Apparently not. Apparently according to this nanny, I was like, oh, come on. He must be having affairs left, right and centre. And she was like, that's not at all the vibe in the house. Like if that is happening, that is so unbelievably under the radar. There is no way the kids are picking up on that. The presentation to their own children is very much like, we are a very happy family. And really cute little intel about their bedrooms. Apparently they each have their bedroom designed in like a really specific style to suit their personality.
So they do have separate bedrooms?
No, sorry, the kids.
Oh, right.
And I think, although one thing she did tell me that was a little bit bitchy, actually.
Oh.
So one negative thing she did say is that Victoria has an obsession with Harper's weight.
Oh, no.
And that's obviously partly because of her own like issues when she was growing up, and Harper apparently will be like wearing these little crop tops and wanting to like dance and just like be, this was literally years ago, by the way, guys, as well. So Harper was probably about 8 years old. And Victoria would like get really embarrassed and be like, cover up if she was wearing like a little crop top with her.
Oh no, that's going to really affect her.
I know, isn't it? And like just generally being quite, not, she wasn't on a diet, but she was on like a restricted
oh, God.
Mealtime plan.
That makes me really sad.
I know, for like literally an under 10 year old.
I did laugh when Victoria Beckham was like, and she's like, David loves my new curves. And then there's a picture of her like
literally like,
you look 2D.
Literally like some sticks, like in a sack.
We're not skinny shaming.
No, but actually that's true.
But when you tell us that your favorite treat meal is a slice of unbuttered brown toast, you don't have a healthy attitude.
Yeah, because she even admits that like for literally the last 30 years, all she's eaten is fish, steamed fish and vegetables.
That's not a healthy attitude to food. So. No.
But I feel really bad for her because she actually developed her eating disorder at performing arts school.
Oh, so she had an eating disorder?
Yeah, yeah. I read her biography, autobiography. Did you? Literally, I read it like 20 years ago. Okay, I read it when I was like 10 or 11.
Well, then can't she be more open about that then instead of saying like, the way I stay healthy is by having steamed
fish. It's weird because it was very much a big storyline at the time. Like she was like constantly shamed for being one of the curvier ones at this dance school. The actual like head of the dance school would like constantly annihilate how she looked. She was made to feel insanely insecure, and you know very much that's the culture in dance as well, being skinny. And they'd be like, no one's going to come and pick you for the shows. Fun fact, Victoria was like considered to be kind of one of the, like they never thought she would be a star. Like she was put on like the back row in their like end of year performance when all the agents came and stuff like that.
Well, that's really sad. And I have a lot of empathy for her having had an eating disorder, but I do think therefore her, when she
you
talks about
should
food
be mindful.
Now, yeah. I think saying your treat meal is the slice of unbuttered toast with a bit of salt on, that's what she says.
Oh my God.
Makes me feel like a pig eating like two burgers.
And actually maybe she, she just hasn't realised that only OG fans like myself remember the 2000 autobiography.
Oh my
and the
God,
details in
maybe.
There. So she just thinks that everyone knows. Anyway.
If only you were in the comment section of like the Instagram post.
Oh my God. Speaking of comment sections and weddings, my favorite new podcast, well, it's not new, but like my new personal discovery. Yeah. I think I mentioned this to you the other day, is Jamie Lang's Nearly Wed podcast. I love it. It's so good. So you know Jamie Lang?
Does he have two podcasts?
Yes. I think he has several, and he has a podcast production company. He's quite like a podcasting don. So Jamie Lang is the guy from Made in Chelsea, guys. He is the one with the bleach blonde hair. I actually used to hate him. I used to find him so annoying on Made in Chelsea with his like fake Americanized accent and just being the typical, like prototypical annoying posh boy.
Party.
Spotify.
I think it's an international accent. I've noticed it with really posh people.
Yeah, yeah.
They put on this like, oh, I'm kind of
like a T
Europe.
Is a D. Yeah. And it's like, hey, I went to international school somewhere where you don't know about. It's like the overall vibe.
And they put it, and it's like they've grown up in London and they put it on.
Yeah. And he, however, I heard him on Elizabeth Day's How to Fail like a couple of years ago, and it completely changed my perception of him. I was like, wow, you're actually like a really intelligent, really interesting, very insecure person as well. Like he definitely needs like validation. That's why he like went for fame. So he talks about that in like a really open way, in the way that I think our listeners would certainly all chime with. And yeah, his podcast with his fiance, Sophie Habu, is Nearly Weds. So funny.
What, because they've nearly got married?
Yeah, they're engaged and they're getting married in, I don't know, May or something. At first, like I'd seen this podcast around, but I was like, why would I listen to that? This was before I got engaged. I was like, it's clearly a podcast that's specifically, I was like, it's clearly a podcast that's like specifically about weddings. So that's quite niche. Actually, having started listening to it since I'm engaged, because I was like, oh, maybe this will be interesting if it's like tips on how to like cut the cost down or venues or whatever. Basically, the wedding idea is like the broader narrative arc, but actually the reason it's really funny is because it's just the dynamic between the two of them and hearing all about their lives and all the really embarrassing things that happened to them. They have like no shame. Like Jamie is very out there, like he shares everything, and she'll often be like, Jamie, I told you before we got here and went on air that you had, there was no way that you could say that, and now you have. So the one I was listening to this morning, basically there's loads of poo stories in it, so if you are a bit funny about that kind of thing, it might not be your cup of tea.
I can so imagine him being really immature with his humour.
Yeah, and like listeners call in with their own stories about like weird things that have happened, and poo is often included. You know, like literally stories like from a girl who's, you know, stayed over at her new guy's house and then like pooed and doesn't know how to get rid of the poo in the morning, and so has to like use her bare hands to like shove it out the window. You know, those kinds of stories. Anyway, sorry guys. And he was saying on it today how poor Sophie was really ill. They'd gone away for a couple of nights and she had like food poisoning or whatever. He was like, yeah, all I can describe it when I went into the bathroom is it was like a murder scene. You know, she was sat on the toilet, being sick into a bucket and there was shit all over the walls. And she's like, Jamie, I said you couldn't say that. I said you didn't need to say the bit about the poo on the walls. Like,
have you noticed there's quite a lot of podcasts with couples, like Peter Crouch and his girlfriend?
Yeah, that's like one of the biggest podcasts in the country, literally.
Also, weirdly, Abby Clancy has followed me on Instagram now for 2 years.
Yeah, that is so random. And she watches all your stories,
yes,
isn't she?
I would like to know
I'd love why. To know why.
I mean, love, but why?
Highly recommend Newlyweds. It's just that couple dynamic. It's quite funny because loads of people think they hate each other as well. Like, yes. They'll be like, why is Sophie and Jamie together? She clearly doesn't love him. But you can definitely tell they do have a thing going on. However, Jamie will often pull up the Daily Mail comments about them. And they're just really, really funny. Like, they'll be like, why is Jamie? He recently did like a wedding shred and tried to post a picture of his like newborn. And one of the comments was like, oh, I'm surprised that he and Spencer do anything but just discuss their toupees. Just like ridiculous Daily
Mail.
Do
they have toupees?
No, obviously not.
Spencer also has a podcast with his wife, fiance.
No, he's got Big Fish podcast, which is like a business podcast of his own. That's like,
oh, no, he did a documentary with Vogue Williams.
Yeah, I really like her actually.
Vogue Spencer. Wait, what's her name?
Vogue Williams.
Yeah. Oh, Vogue Williams.
I actually really like her. But yeah, so the most recent one as well, Sophie told a story about how Bradley Cooper like chatted her up. Ooh. And she was like, I've got a fiance, whatever. It felt really lame after, yada, yada, yada. Told this story on the podcast. Lo and behold, the story's in the Daily Mail like the next day. And all the comments are just like, yeah, sure. Sophie obviously just stalked him like she did Jamie, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just like people's really funny takes on their lives and they can really laugh at themselves about it. And Jamie will often post them on his Instagram and stuff as well. So I just like that he's so like self-aware.
Imagine being chatted up by Bradley Cooper.
I know, the dream.
I think I would not mention my boyfriend.
Yeah, unfortunately, Jamie was like there, so she could not.
That's sad. Yeah. I think also most partners would understand that you just want to have your 5 minutes. With.
I know, she was like, I'm seriously regretting saying that. I'm so annoyed. Why am I so lame? Why did I say that?
Yeah.
Because he's like her dream man as well. But anyway, it is definitely a really, it's a fun one. You know, for a podcast where you just want some laughs, you don't need to like learn a load of stuff. You're not trying to be cultural.
Mm.
You just want a bit of fun, maybe on the tube, on the way out, on a evening.
That. I have to say, I listen. He does Radio 1 sometimes, which is kind of strange.
Yes, he's been replacing Molly King while she's had a baby.
But I did notice that he's definitely a bit too OTT for radio. Like, I just noticed he was like going slightly pushing the boundaries of what you can say.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, and his co-host, I can't remember who it was very much like, tone it down.
That's interesting. Yeah. Well, he is, I guess maybe because he's used to podcasting, like he'll be talking about like their dog and he'll just, you know, say like, Bobby was licking her vagina and bum hole and then blah, blah, blah. You know, he's not scared.
It was that kind of vibe on radio. It was like very much taking sexual banter to the limit that you can on
Radio. On Radio 1 without literally getting dragged off air.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's fab, babe. I'm going to have a listen to that. Also, talking of fab audio, guys, you may have noticed how good we sound at the moment, thanks to our new mics from Shure.
Yeah, guys, we upgraded and we are oh so happy about it. This is basically vital intel, FYI as well, for any budding podcasters out there listening. We're recording on a pair of MV7s, which have USB and XLR outputs. And so they're like amazingly versatile for all types of podcasters, musicians also. We love them because they don't pick up any ambient sound like table banging or even a bit of typing when we're quickly checking something, mid-record, which makes things a lot easier for our editor, I must say, particularly when we're recording from home rather than the studio, as there's lots of sound we can't control.
Plus, if you connect them to your desktop via USB, then you can also access the Shure Motive app, which lets you control your individual volumes. Highly necessary when Kathleen is a foghorn and I am a mouse. So you can adjust your distance from the microphone as well.
They're also very small, very compact, super easy to transport, and you can order them in an MV7 bundle that comes with this amazing mini tripod desk stand. So very ideal for recording from home, as we often do, or nipping around to various recordings, whether they're at labels, restaurants, our favourite little studios. We're all over town, aren't we, honey?
Yes. So thank you so much to Shure for gifting us these fabulous mics and we can't wait to use them forever.
They've honestly been on our dream list for like a year now, so we are very, very, very happy gals. Grab yours at Shure.com and thank us later.
So on to more culture. I want to tell you, Kathleen, about my new obsession, my new celebrity obsession.
Go on.
Mia Goth. Have you heard of her?
Yeah, as in Shia LaBeouf's wife.
Well, ex-wife.
Interesting.
Do you know they had a kid recently?
Yes, like, that's why I thought they... Yeah. I thought they're definitely still together, aren't they? Because they divorced and then they had a child afterwards. So
yes, they had... I thought like they were still broken later. Up. Well, anyway, they're divorced. I'm not sure if they're back together, but she has just given birth to his child. So maybe they got back together for a
rekindled.
Bit.
Rekindled.
Yeah. I kind of got the impression that like she would be too mature for his shit. But anyway, no judgment. Anyway, Mia Goth is starring in this film that is out in cinemas now that I haven't seen yet, but I'm desperate to, which has been described as White Lotus Goes to Hell.
Ooh.
You will hate it, Cathers, because it is absolutely deranged, which is why I'm so excited to see it. And I've seen some of our other films, which I'll talk about in a second. But basically, it's about a rich couple that go to this fictional island where the laws are very different to anywhere else in the world. And they accidentally, and this isn't a spoiler, no spoilers, this is literally in the trailer, they accidentally do a hit and run and kill a local. And the island has a very specific way of doing justice, which is where normally if it was a local person killing a local person, you would be killed. You are executed by the children of your victim, usually. But if you're a tourist with a lot of money, you can pay to clone yourself. And then the clone of yourself is executed and you have to be present.
Oh my God, that is bonkers. I actually kind of like the sound of this.
Yeah, so what it means is there are loads of these deranged, rich tourists that come specifically to do fucked up shit and act their most like deep, twisted, sordid fantasies, rape, all types of murder, bestiality, everything. They get locked up, but then they pay off the police within minutes to create an avatar of themselves, a clone of themselves, and then they get a kick out of watching this cloned version of themselves get executed in front of them. But it means that essentially Mia Goth is one of the people who essentially just spends like the entire film doing some of the most deranged things imaginable. I'm kind of scared to watch it on the big screen because it might be so depraved. There's one scene which has caused a stir, which is Alexander Skarsgård breastfeeding from Mia Goth's blood. But apparently it's really good.
Is it a thriller? Like, what's it meant to be?
I think it's an Eat the Rich satire slash slasher.
So there's lots of, like, blood and gore.
Yeah, I think it's by Brandon Cronenberg, who is the son of David Cronenberg, who's also renowned for, like, really, really fucked up films. Anyway, the reason I got obsessed with Mia Goth is because I watched her first film, X, which is basically what shot her to fame after Nymphomaniac. Did you realise she was the main star in Nymphomaniac? I hadn't realised.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, anyway, and X is basically sees a group of porn actors go to a remote town to film a porn film. And then they're living next to a really old couple who are like 95. And the old woman, part of that couple, develops an obsession, like a sexual obsession with Mia Goth's character.
Ooh.
And they share the same name. And it's quite obvious that like she's yearning for her lost youth and she wants to have sex with her because she wants to like reclaim.
Sounds a bit cat brushing.
That's what I was making. Because at first I was like, this is repellent. But then I was like, it's actually really interesting. The film kind of challenges why we're so repelled by like the old naked body and like sex beyond a certain age. Like
cat brushing is the collection of stories that we recommended sometime last year by a debut novelist who was like in her 80s.
Yes, exactly. And there's a similar story where she becomes really fixated and sexually obsessed with a young nurse.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is, and she's not a lesbian, like she had a husband, and it's the same in X. This old woman obviously has her husband. So I don't even think it's necessarily like a sexuality thing so much as just wanting to be, to see yourself as the young woman you once were. It's really interesting how I think that must happen with a lot of older women.
Yeah.
It's like less about your sexuality suddenly like flipping when you're 90, as opposed to just wanting to see a young female body.
Yeah.
Like, this was once me. This episode is sponsored by Huel.
Okay, so guys, today I want to talk to you very quickly about Huel Black Edition, a high protein, super convenient meal that is literally my savior when it comes to squeezing in exercise and healthy eating around work. I'm sure I'm not the only one here that struggles with having time during the working day to make a nutritious meal. I optimistically did hope before I went freelance that I would have more time, but obviously that has turned out not to be the case. So in order to optimize my working day, I would tend to either buy a ridiculously expensive salad if I'm trying to be healthy, or just buy some like crap, quick junk food.
God, I know, and I literally do not have time to meal prep in the evenings. I've tried so many times, but I never seem to be able to fit in. So Huel literally solves that problem so well.
It really does. It is the ideal solution. Every Huel meal has a massive 40 grams of protein and 26 vitamins and minerals in just a 400 calorie shake. It's made of all these whole food ingredients like rice, peas, and flaxseed. It's totally vegan. Literally all you have to do is add water and shake. I blend mine up with ice, and it's only £1.68 per meal. I've always personally really struggled with breakfast because I would tend to just not eat anything, feel really sick later in the day. I'm juggling so much from writing to editing to recording, so it really helps me be super disciplined with my time, and Huel means it's just one less thing to worry about. Very sensible. I just love it.
I just really love how quick Huel is in particular. I've told listeners this before, but it is so useful just to be able to grab my shaker, put in some powder, add some water, and shake it on the way from the gym to the office. It also means I don't have my sugary crap cereal at my desk, which I used to. So I feel so much healthier now that I've started my Huel journey. Also, fun fact, Huel has over 160 health benefits in every shake from all the vitamins. It's got iron, vitamin D12, vitamin C. I mean, you name it, guys, the vitamin's in there.
So do join us and get your free t-shirt and shaker at huel.com/straight up. That's huel.com/straight up.
Anyway, it is fucked up though. I mean, I've never seen a pair of like 90 plus people have graphic sex on screen.
Wow, I don't think I have actually.
No, it's quite shocking, but then like quite tender at the same time. It's definitely like a very thoughtful and thought-provoking film, which I think a lot of slasher films aren't. So watch X, then watch Pearl, which is a follow-up. And Pearl is the film that's also out now, starring Mia Goth again, which has been absolutely given like 5-star rave reviews by The Guardian, and which was snubbed from the Oscars, which everyone's really upset about.
So has she spoken about the whole Shia LaBeouf thing? Like, what's her public stance on it?
I haven't read any interviews with FKA Twigs. I haven't heard her
say anything at all.
No. She's
she's British, right?
She grew up in London. So she's, I think she's half Brazilian, and she grew up in London. But she's amazing. Also, X also stars the girl who plays in Wednesday Addams, Jenny Ortega. It was so weird. Oh, yeah. Seeing,
Jenna.
Yeah, Jenna Ortega playing this like porn star.
I loved that little like SAGs clip from the other day with her and Aubrey Plaza, deadpanning.
Oh my God, Aubrey Plaza.
Darkness Queens.
Aubrey Plaza is such a good interview. Oh. I was watching some YouTube clips of her. She's like super sassy, super ironic, very funny.
Ooh, yeah. I'm going to have to go in and find one.
So that's my obsession. Go in. If you like horror, you'll like all of those. If you don't like horror, then don't watch anything I've just said.
Nice. Okay.
But I did actually figure out why it is that I love horror so much. I
go on.
Was reading a piece. It's called Benign Masochism. And it's when you like the danger, it's like feeling close to danger, but knowing you have complete control over your surroundings. So it gives you a kind of sense of control.
But then why is it called benign masochism? Because benign would mean that it's like good or unharmful.
Exactly. Whereas masochism means I would actually be like enacting violent fantasies. So I would actually be harming myself or others. Whereas benign means that it's all in a safe space of the screen.
Right. Yeah, see, for me, I still just get traumatized by disgusting things on screen. I just can't look, and I just don't want to have like the mental image. So I close my eyes.
I only was able to watch X in the afternoon whilst my boyfriend was asleep next to me.
Yes, I don't think that should be one for me, but all the horror honeys will love that.
Also,
I'm
just,
sure.
Do you think Mia? Did you ever see Emma?
No.
Oh, the funny Anna Taylor-Joy.
Oh, I tried to watch it and literally thought it was one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Oh,
switched
my God.
Off swiftly.
I left the cinema.
It was like comically bad.
So bad. They tried to do the Fleabag treatment, essentially.
Yes.
Anyway, Mia Goth is like Emma's best friend in that.
Ooh, okay.
Anyway, she's going to be a star, guys. So
nice.
Keep your eyes peeled.
Very nice.
What else?
I read the cover interview with Paris Hilton for Glamour, which was quite juicy and fun. I mean, for one, my God, she really has had a tough time of it, beyond even the things that we already know about the correctional schools that she was at as a teenager. Basically, she's put more details in her forthcoming memoir, which
yes.
is called Paris the Memoir, excitingly. And it's out in March. She basically talks about abuse that she underwent at these correctional schools in more detail, perhaps, than she had before.
But why is every female celebrity a victim of sexual abuse?
I know, it's awful. She also details a Harvey Weinstein encounter, and she tells the Glamour journalist about it. And apparently she was like 19 and she was at an AMFAR gala, which obviously was his event. And she'd been sat with a friend previously in the hotel or something in the morning, and he'd come over and said, oh, so you want to be in movies? And she was like, yeah, I really want to be in a movie. He was like, okay, come up to my room and we can run some scripts. Let's have a meeting. And then she didn't go up to his room because she just didn't want to, you know, for the next, like, during the day. And then in the evening he saw her and was like, obviously had felt like snubbed by her, and like was like, why didn't you come up? Followed her into the bathroom, like shouting. She locked herself in the stall and he was like hammering on the door, shouting at her like an unhinged lunatic, and had to be carried out by security.
Oh my
at his
God.
Own event. And he was like, this is my event. And she was just like scared. So she was like, this guy's got really creepy vibes. Also, she was like, yes, it was definitely like a known thing that everyone just turned a blind eye to.
That is so sad.
It was quite interesting her talking about her surrogacy experience, because...
Oh, yeah, everyone thinks the baby's not even hers.
Oh, do they? Well, I think it definitely is, because she details what actually went down in the piece. For one, she actually chose to have a surrogate, not because she has to or there's a kind of medical or biological reason, but just because she wanted to, because she's got like a really bad pathological fear of childbirth. So she didn't want to. It's literally the like too posh to push.
Why did she have a pathological fear of childbirth?
So she attributes it in part back to, she says there's like two reasons. One, the abuse that she went through at the correctional facility schools
just
in
don't
Utah.
Want anything coming.
Well, trigger warning, guys, like if this is uncomfortable, you don't listen now. But one of the abuses that she alleges happened regularly at these correctional schools was that they would like do virginity checks on certain girls.
Oh, fuck.
And so they would be like essentially like sexually abusing them to like check. And that has been a big part of it. And obviously relationship
up.
To her body and sex has also been really negatively impacted by the sex tape. And also she saw a woman give birth when she was on The Simple Life. And she said that was really traumatic as well. So combined, all those experiences have like literally made her, she said like her two fears are dying in childbirth. And she just didn't want to do it. So she used the same surrogacy doctor as Kim Kardashian, asked her for advice.
And why did Kim Kardashian use a surrogacy?
So Kim Kardashian had her first two babies like herself. Yeah. And then after the second one, she had like loads of complications and they were like, you can't ever carry a child again. And she still wanted to have more kids. So it was actually like a medical reason.
Right, yeah. And did, this is quite a graphic question, but when she was sexually abused with the virginity checks, is that because they genuinely wanted to check if she was a virgin because they're mental, like religious loons, or because they...
It sounded a bit like it was staff taking advantage. Like she said they would like...
pretending it was for the virginity
checks. Yeah, but actually they were targeting like certain girls in the class who would be like taken away to these rooms where they'd be like screaming, crying, and like six members of staff, men and women, would be holding them down. Like it kind of sounds very much tied to the really just abusive atmosphere that was going on, or I think still goes on at these like mental military schools. I'm so glad we don't have those in England. I remember when I was a kid, I used to actually think like, oh my God, I'm so glad I don't live in America so my parents can't send me there.
Yes.
If I was naughty.
There was a massive religious school that was shut down for abusing its students like 2 months ago in America. I was reading it.
Yeah. And Paris is like a massive activist in that space now. She's trying to have children more like tightly protected and schools like this. Because she says that her parents were victims as well, in that everything was hidden from them. So she's not like angry at her parents for sending her. She understands why they did, because she was a terrible 18. They were living in part on the Waldorf Astoria in Park Avenue, and when she was like 16 she would just like break out at night and go to all the New York clubs. So her parents just didn't know what to do with her.
I would love to know, like with Paris, was it last year she had that Netflix cooking show that just got cancelled after season one?
Oh yeah, I've got a feeling, I could be wrong, but I think she's working on season two.
Oh,
she's
really?
Definitely working on another series of her Peacock show, Love in Paris, that details her relationship with her billionaire.
Because I was wondering
Carter
whether
something.
People have got bored
Carter
of
room,
whether she still holds the same power as she used to.
Well, get this, right? I was really surprised. She has more than 19 brands, including even like luxury like dog accessories. So she turns up with her little dog in this carrier that has her, you know how sliving is one of her catchphrases now, which she has trademarked. And this dog carrier is $750 and people buy them. People buy Paris Hilton branded dog accessories, which I found quite fascinating. And beyond the 19 brands, she's also had 30 perfumes. 30. Can you imagine having that many perfumes? And she's the highest paid female DJ in the world. She commands up to $1 million a set.
But so why have that many brands? Like, how can you possibly be interested in all of them?
I know. Some of them must be the kind of classic slapping your name on it. Surely.
Yeah.
Surely.
Are some of them her family, like her dad's or all?
No. These are like her 19 lines that she has that are like clothing, makeup, dog accessories.
Talk about spreading yourself shebang. Too thin.
Yeah. But it's quite a fun piece. You know, I wouldn't say it's like moving the needle of pop culture, but it's fun.
My first porn film that I watched was One Night in Paris.
Yeah, that was actually the first like porn thing that I ever saw as well.
Really? I think
we must have been that age when it came out. I remember a friend like showing it to us on her like Big Brother's computer.
Yeah.
Poor guy. Anyway.
Does she have a romantic partner?
Yes, she has a husband. So she's just had this baby.
Oh,
this is what I was going to say about the whole thing of the baby's not being hers. So she and Carter Room, I think that's his name. Again, could be butchering
what
the surname.
Is he? An entrepreneur?
He's a billionaire. Oh. Yeah. And she started making embryos in the pandemic. So they already have like 20 embryos that they've made from her eggs and his sperm.
Yeah.
And they're all boys. So it's so funny the way she talked about it, like as if it's shopping. Like she was like, yeah, we've got 20 embryos and they're all boys. And like, I actually really want a girl. So yeah, we're starting the process again. So, you know, like, is it just like a minor to like create embryos?
Do you think
she just throw away the 20 boys?
Modifies them.
Well, she is kind of doing like a natural selection thing there, isn't she? If she's being like, I'm just going to chuck away all 19 boy embryos. Because she is like 42 or something. So I did think that the whole surrogacy thing was an age-related issue. But she said even if she was like 17, she would be having a surrogate. She's actually been pregnant once before as well. She's a big reproductive rights advocate because she had an abortion when she was in her 20s.
From a sexual abuse
account? No. Just she doesn't specify. She just, again, I think it's actually one of those great examples of like, she just didn't want a child at that time. And is really happy with her decision.
God. Celebrities who DJ. You know Stephen Bartlett DJs in a special.
I saw he did his first gig at Printworks. That's so funny.
I would die.
Do you know that Printworks is closing?
Yes, I do. I really love Printworks as well.
It's sad times. But I actually listened to a really, really good episode of Diary of the CEO. Diary of the CEO? I was like, Diary of the Steve-O, but... And I recommend fellow fans go and check out. I actually listened to two really good ones recently. I'd gone off them for a bit and two have really reeled me back in.
Huns, we want to talk to you about therapy, which previous listeners of the podcast will know I've started for the first time this year thanks to our paid advertiser for the show, online therapy service BetterHelp, which is such an affordable, flexible way of starting therapy for people who are a bit nervous to try it before.
And to get you started, BetterHelp is very generously giving Straight Up listeners 10% off their first month. We've put together all the details in the show notes, so do just go and check them out there if you're interested. But Elle, for those that don't already know, please do explain, how does BetterHelp work?
You fill out a questionnaire about who you are and what issues you may want to speak about, as well as what kind of therapist you want, which is really important, be that in terms of gender, ethnicity, or religious views, for instance. And within 48 hours, BetterHelp can match you with a therapist.
And for people who are super busy and don't have time to go physically to meet a therapist every week, or they just find like an in-person session just too intimidating, then BetterHelp is perfect, as all the sessions are over the phone or video call, depending on what you prefer. And you can even do it via online messaging if that's your bag.
For our super shy listeners, I was matched with mine last week and I was so nervous because I've often felt like I don't have a specific trauma I necessarily need to unpack, and it's not like I'm depressed. And therefore I thought maybe I don't qualify for therapy. But recently I felt that I could just really benefit from talking to someone to make sense of certain things and patterns of thinking. And I do actually think that therapy is for everyone, and no matter how big or small your problems may be, it can be useful.
Exactly. BetterHelp is affordable as far as therapy goes as well, with sessions starting from just £50 a week. And what's great is that if you're not happy with your therapist, then you can swap for a different one at any time at no extra cost. In therapy, it's super important that you actually like connect with your therapist.
Definitely.
So I feel like this is such a essential part of the service.
Absolutely. Visit betterhelp.com/straightup2023 today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/straightup2023, written out like a number.
Thank you so much to BetterHelp. Speaking of DJing, Ramesh Ranganathan, who is my favourite comedian and whose stand-up I actually like. I think he is 100% my favourite
comedian.
See, I tried to
watch his Netflix special and I just didn't find it funny.
See, that's what I watched the other day. I watched his Netflix special after having listened to the episode because Marlon was like, oh, come on, we've got to watch it. And I was like, okay, I can handle this. But I love his like Sri Lanka TV show, his podcast. He's just really funny. I love him.
I like his podcast. I like how sarcastic and dry he is.
Yeah. And so he's saying in the episode that he's also been learning to DJ. Like over the pandemic, he learned to DJ, same as Stephen. And so he's asking Stephen, like, how shit are you? And Stephen's like, yeah, I mean, I'm still pretty shit. Like I've done my first gig, but I'm at the top end of shit.
Oh my God, at Printworks.
Yeah. And then Ramesh is like, okay, so for you to understand how shit I am, I've got my own BBC radio show, which obviously I'm not doing like the DJing, I'm doing the hosting. During the pandemic where I learned to DJ, they gave me a time frame and they were like, right, Ramesh, at the end of these like 6 months, whatever, we're going to get you to make one of your mixes, because these like full mixes go on BBC Sounds or whatever alongside. And then Well, they were like, once you've done it, we'll be getting you on these every week. It's going to be great. You know, the Ramesh mix by Ramesh. It's just going to be fantastic. The BBC were really excited about it. So he like beavs away, learns to DJ, thinks he's like really making some good moves and submits his mix. And that was like 2 years ago, and that's the last he ever heard of it. And he's never been asked to do another one.
That's hilarious. Did that one go live?
I don't know, but it's like his own radio show.
So he's batshit.
Yes, they do not want him making the mixes. And there's also a really good one with Richard Madden. No, sorry,
what?
Richard Hammond. I don't know why I'm thinking Richard Madden in my head. Richard Hammond, i.e. Top Gear guy.
Yes.
The short one.
I've interviewed him.
So have I.
Have you?
And he...
The cheeky one. Cheeky short one.
Yeah, cheeky short one, who obviously had a really big near-death experience about 10 years ago when he was in a terrible crash as part of Top Gear. And he tells some really interesting stories about that time.
Okay.
He had a very interesting near-death experience, like a morphine dream, which he describes as like going up into like the light towards this tree. And basically the doctors had been like, there's nothing we can do. I'm so sorry, but it does look like we're losing him. And his wife, after obviously being like devastated and trying everything, actually got super angry and started like screaming and shouting at him, like, you don't do this. Don't leave us. You idiot. Because obviously she was pretty annoyed. Like he was like, you know, on death's door, age like 35 or something, because he like drove too fast in a silly car on a silly show. You know what I mean? It could be like prevented. And in his like morphine state, in his induced coma, he sensed this like anger. And felt like, oh, even though he was walking up towards this big tree that's like his favorite tree in the Lake District, he was like, if I go any further up the hill, I'm going to get in really big trouble. Like someone's really angry with me. I really shouldn't do this. And then like decided like not to go up. And yeah, really interesting. Like a little.
Okay, I'll listen to that.
Yeah, just for anyone that's interested in near-death experiences.
I need to. I mean, I've gone off, Stephen, because of the 2 episodes a week thing. Yes. Made me feel like it's homework and like I'll never be able to catch up.
Never be able to catch up. And I will say, I think that the quality is maybe not quite as tight now that there's 2 a week. Just because obviously you had to like fill the gaps, you know? And like you say, it's just overwhelming. I can't possibly keep up with all of them now.
It's begun to feel like a chore. However, I did really like the Charlie Stoth one.
Oh, I haven't actually listened to that one. That was during my phase of not listening, so I'll go back.
It's really good. He's the founder of Fire in the Booth. And it was really interesting to see how much the BBC very much did not believe in the success of his idea, Fire in the Booth. So he kept their IP, which was then amazing when he got bought by Apple. So he could just literally just take it out of BBC, take it to Apple, because that would normally never happen with that kind of show format. But yeah, just shows BBC bosses really lost out on that.
God, the poor old BBC having a bit of a bad time recently with Louis Theroux launching his podcast on Spotify.
Oh my God.
They've not got any ownership there.
I'm really sorry, but I've gone off Louis Theroux. He's too annoying and bumbling.
Oh no, I love him.
There's the faux, like...
I liked his Stephen.
Oh, no, I didn't like it. It was just like... You're not that awkward and bumbling, and it's a bit of an act. And
I do know what you mean. It's hammed up a little bit here and there.
It's just a bit much. It makes me feel a bit sick sometimes.
I did like his Weekends with Louis. No, what was it called? Not Weekends. That's like his original, the recent show, the celebrity interview one.
Yes, with Stormzy.
And Rita Ora.
Rita Ora, yes. Yeah.
Did you know that she and Tyga have got married?
Yes.
Cute.
I did know that. And she also shot down the rumours that she was in a throuple with him and Tessa Thompson.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
I reckon they probably just had like a threesome the night before or something.
Yeah, also, I mean, she was very much like, oh my God, I mean, does literally like no one go out? It's literally just what three friends would do. It's like, hon, there are graphic pictures of you essentially having a three-way kiss. That's not what you do with your friends.
It definitely looked like a throuple sitch.
Yeah.
Like, without a doubt, there was not any ambiguity in those pictures.
It's not us like making things weird in our head. That's just what it was.
Like, would I do that if we were out, you and your boyfriend? No, probably not.
Exactly. I think she should have just owned up to be like, we were having fun, so what, rather than like, you guys are weird.
Yeah, I'm surprised they actually like acknowledged it. I thought they might just like keep quiet about that one.
I mean, hot throuple.
Yeah. Hats off to them. Good for them.
Yeah.
He came across really well in her Louis Theroux. He like pops in and out.
Does
and
he?
You realise, because at first I was like, that's random that they're together. And then as soon as you see them together, you're like, oh, they actually have like tons in common.
Do you know what throuple has not worked out? David Hayes' throuple.
Has it not? He literally posted about them both on Valentine's Day.
Because he went on a secret holiday with one of them. And left the other one at home.
Well, you know how David Hayes once chatted me up. One of my few claims to fame.
Yes.
So thank God I didn't get sucked into that.
I know.
Sordid situation.
You could have been one of the throuple.
How lucky.
I bet Marlon would have got involved.
Yeah, with David Hayes and his two girlfriends. We could be a quintuplet. No.
That's five. Would you be five? If oh, yes, you would. Yes. Sorry. Yes. You would be a quintuple. Okay, exhausted my mathematical capabilities. Talking of people that have chatted people up, David Beckham was very handsy with me when I interviewed him, and James May was very inappropriate.
Sorry, James May as well. Like,
yes, he kept.
He literally have a TV show about like toys?
Yes, he kept telling me to put my glasses back on because it was hot that way. And then we organised for me to do a video segment with him where he would teach me how to drive.
Oh yeah, that what happened to that?
He didn't turn up on the day.
Oh,
we literally rented the Mercedes. We had it at Vogue House, Hanover Square. I was ready. We were gonna do this thing where he teaches me how to drive, which I now realise it's like so dangerous, me driving from Oxford Street to his house in Surrey or wherever it was. I think his wife...
In a sports car as well. I think that would have been quite bonkers in hindsight.
Also, it was literally because I said I failed twice on a manual and an automatic at six majors. And then he was like, oh, I'll teach you if you put your glasses back on. And I was like, okay. And then emailed him the next day being like, I think this would make for really great content.
Oh my God.
Anyway, I think what happened is his wife was like, James,
are you insane?
You're going to get cancelled.
You can't. Interesting. Yeah, that seems likely.
There's no way he would have escaped from that without tarnishing his good name.
No.
Or mine.
Speaking of dangerous driving, my new guilty pleasure on TV at the moment is The World's Most Dangerous Roads,
what?
Which is this like series on Dave. We like stumbled across it last week and then we're like, oh my God, we must like find Dave online and watch every single episode that's out, where basically two comedians get together to drive the most dangerous road. So each episode is different comedians doing a different country. And it's like literally the most insane roads like in the world. It's so funny. I actually can't help but be...
What, like, aren't they going to have like a fatal accident at some point?
No, but you're like, how have they not? Like, there's one with Sue Perkins when it's in Alaska on this main road in like the northernmost point of Alaska that is only used by these giant mega trucks that are going to and from like the oil rig. And they literally have like 12 wheels. Like, they're so big that they can't actually stop when they put their brakes on because there's just so much power. So all the truckers that drive along here have to communicate via like an intercom system. So you'll say like, oh, coming up on the left, we're going to be turning into this, because otherwise people would just constantly crash and die on the turnings. And there's like thick, thick snow, just white, like frosty mist everywhere. You literally can't see a thing. And it's really funny because you just see them getting more and more stressed, but you know they're going to be okay. Because like I say, they're not going to put it on TV if they die in a fatal accident or fall off a cliff at Hairpin Bend. So you kind of can watch it. Actually quite like the, what did you say? Benign masochism.
Yes.
I can like really laugh at it and find it super funny watching them get insanely stressed and cross with each other because they think they're going to die knowing that they're actually fine.
Yes.
I love it. It's so great.
Except yours is actually even more twisted than mine because mine is so clearly fictional, whereas yours is like real life.
Yeah, and I'm like watching Sue Perkins like getting really, really worried about the fact that some huge monster truck's going to smash into them, and I'm like chuckling away to myself.
Yeah, that's called just actual sadism.
Yeah. Oh, it's good though. I recommend.
Well, Huns, lots of culture recommendations.
I have
there.
Two more.
Okay.
All right. Firstly, when we mentioned the menu earlier, I should have brought up Farrah Store's takedown of Noma in her newsletter this week.
Oh, it's excellent.
It is.
I actually replied so to her good, being isn't like, it? What a great newsletter.
But also, I mean, she definitely should have watched the menu before writing that.
Yes, I did.
Missed a trick a bit there.
Glaring omission.
Like, glaring. Yeah, it's a bit like...
Did you
mean to do that? Because surely that is literally the entire peg.
Yeah. Have you read? I guess it's because it's closing, right? She also didn't mention that it's closing.
No. All she said in it is that her and her husband have wanted to go for years, and so they've been on this like special like lottery wait list for like a decade, and this year just happens to be when they finally got onto the list.
Yeah, and she basically hated it. And she describes in such insane detail how ludicrous it is, and it's even like the chilling. Yes, chef.
Yeah. It's literally the same. And when they get there, and it's like a shaking, sad, shivering little man with a clipboard who's like, come and see the gardens. And they have to like walk around in the cold with all these other guests who are clearly all hating it as well. And they get like a horrible, tepid little cold cup of tea.
Do you think it's because for legal reasons they can't? She can't make that.
No, no. I think she actually hasn't seen the menu and just didn't really realise.
Also, even if you haven't seen the menu, you might have heard of it.
Well, you would think, I've got to say, it has been quite a big film recently, but it is too funny. Guys, if you go and look on her Instagram, hopefully they'll still be there. She might have saved her stories to her highlight. The dishes, it looks like, what was it called? The ecosystem.
Yeah.
The one I sent you earlier of the bear dumplings. And there's like a massive pine cone on the plates and like loads of moss.
I feel bad for her, obviously, within the context of her being able to afford this in the first place. Oh, but her spending $1,500 and then leaving the restaurant feeling hungry.
She does make a massive caveat that they've been like saving for it for ages, even for them. And it was like... not just the £600 a person for the meal, which is just the food. You then have to pay like, there's a juice pairing, a compulsory juice pairing for like 175, or you have to pay more for a wine pairing.
Yes. And so it's 400 for the food, 175 for the juice, and then 200 for the, no, another 300 for the wine or something.
Absolutely bonkers. Mad. And she said like of the 15 dishes, like 13 of them were cold. So most of the fold was freezing.
Oh my God, that made me feel so upset when I read that.
Yeah.
And everything tasted of vinegar.
And there was a reindeer penis. Brain custard that she basically got in trouble for the staff for like not finishing.
And reindeer penis that tasted like a nut salad from MS.
No, it was a nut salad. It was a reindeer penis salad.
And I see.
She said it tasted just like the nut salad from M&S. But apparently
like,
they
actually.
Didn't say what was in it. I like that nut salad as well. Apparently they were just like smirking and don't tell you that it was actually reindeer penis like until the end.
I actually thought that surely in this day and age, unconsensual consumption. Like surely you would...
Well, I'm sure you sign up to like eating like whatever the hell they want to put in front of you when you go there.
And the waiter wouldn't let her husband go to the toilet.
Yes. Oh my God, that was so the menu, wasn't it? And then he had to sit for another like 10 minutes before the cold course even came out.
The irony is the course is cold, so it wouldn't have mattered if he'd literally spent 20 minutes in the toilet.
And apparently the waitress looked like really worried and upset that like one of the chefs might notice something.
Oh my God. Like, and she does make the point, like, why has no one ever written about this honestly before?
Yeah.
And if that had been, why has no proper food critic written it like that?
Probably because they all go for free, so they just can't bear to like...
Yeah.
Bring out.
But I remember when
the truth.
Who was the critic who absolutely annihilated the 3 Michelin star restaurant, the Georges Cinq? It went so viral like 2 years ago. He gave it like 1 star.
I didn't see that, but yeah. I'm definitely gonna go and look for that because I
was
love
it.
Annihilation.
Yeah, and it was just like, wow, this the Paris's most famous hotel has never been like held to task like this. It was amazing. It literally went viral.
Okay, I'm definitely gonna have to look that up.
Yeah. Okay, what's your second recommendation?
My second, well, it's not really a recommendation as such, as I just wanted to ask you if you have seen Selena Gomez's Apple TV documentary.
No.
It's not wildly new. I think it came out sometime
about
last year. Yeah, My Mind and Me. I watched it last week.
Good.
Really good. I mean, quite sad, like really quite sad. Like, my God, you know, I thought like, okay, I knew obviously that she's been very public about her struggles with bipolar disorder, but I thought that there would be more like levity to it. And it's dark.
Lots of shots of her crying.
Yeah. So it basically opens in 2016 when Selena was 23. Obviously she's 30 now, and she's preparing for her world tour in support of her 2015 album Revival, which was meant to be her album that was going to like refashion her image from like Disney girl to like single adult, like sexual being, real woman vibes. And she just, in hindsight, now you know as well that she was like really, really suffering. She was mentally unwell. Like, she's just so unhappy and she just hates herself so much. And she's like crying at every single thing about herself, her performance. She just annihilates. Like, she can tell that the self-loathing is just like so intense. And it then kind of cuts, that's like the first 15 minutes, and then it cuts to the fact that that tour was cancelled after 55 performances because she was admitted to a psychiatric facility. It then kind of follows like her recovery. It is so, so like sensitively done, but it shows her in a really interesting light because it doesn't show her to be like this perfect person. Like, it shows like her being like a bit of a bitch.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's unclear whether some of that is directly like symptomatic of her suffering with her mental health, or whether that's just like they're trying to show a fuller picture of someone as a complicated human. Like, you see her like snapping at one of her friends, and then like the bit that really stuck out to me that I thought was really super relevant for the listener huns is the really excruciating like press day scenes.
Oh my god,
I mean, it made me like actually hate myself as a journalist.
The journalists visible in it?
Yeah. Yeah,
so
they are.
Must have been allowed to.
No, I don't know if you see their faces. Like, you hear their voices and see right. The back of their heads and stuff, and you hear all their questions. But oh my God, it is like horrifically awkward.
Why
you can
is it
tell. So Selena just hates doing press. Like, she clearly doesn't want to be there, doesn't want to be doing it. She's doing one of those mad days. She's come to London. It's all set in London, where she's like, you know, doing radio shows and she's doing some filming and she's doing like something else. So it's like really, really full throttle. It's in 2019. The journalist basically asks her towards the end of their chat, like, what she sees in her future, like, other than music.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those really, like, bland questions. And Selena basically says, like, oh, I don't want to be in music forever. I want to, like, focus on my philanthropy. And the journalist goes, okay, great, thank you. Like, that's the end of the interview. And Selena is furious.
What, she can't talk about her philanthropy?
Yeah, so she, like, goes back into her friends and she's, like, shouting about it. Like, she's, like, it makes me feel like a product.
The thing is, though, I understand, but I think as journalists, no one wants to hear a celebrity talk about philanthropy.
Well, that's what I was saying. So she's like, do you know how cheap it makes me feel? She's asking me questions, like good ones. And then she doesn't even pay attention to what I was saying. I don't want to do that ever again. And she's just saying how it makes her feel like really disgusting, really used, like it's like her Disney days. But it's like, that journalist probably was well-intentioned, as in they've only got 10 minutes with you. They're speaking to the most famous woman in the whole world. Obviously, if it was a normal conversation, they would love to ask about your philanthropy, but they've already been told last question. So they don't want to dig further, not because like they disregard your philanthropic efforts, but just because they probably are shit scared that they're going over time.
Yeah, but also every single celebrity has philanthropic efforts, many of which they're paid to talk about. So like, it's not that interesting. Every celebrity donates loads of charity, is like the head of loads of, you know, helms like certain charities. I personally would not want to ask Selena Gomez about her philanthropic efforts. I wouldn't find it interesting.
No.
Like really, a Selena Gomez interview, you want to hear about one of the most famous pop musicians and her mental health and like just who she is as a person. I'm not sure how interesting it is to hear her essentially like, I don't know. It depends if her philanthropic efforts are really personally tied to her own like journey and lived experience. And
so she does a lot of activism now around mental health. Like they show her at the end of the documentary in 2019, like kind of reckoning with her recovery and realizing that her kind of destiny or role is to like connect with others and destigmatize mental health and do as much as she possibly can to get people talking about it, which is amazing. But there's this more unfortunate segment basically that's from 2019 as well, but it's Selena visiting Kenya. So she traveled to Kenya. I think it was with a specific charity that now is like kind of controversial.
Right.
So that was interesting that they even just chose to include that. But the director basically directed like Madonna's seminal documentary.
Right.
So he's kind of well known and that's it. And randomly, he is the brother of Selena's manager.
Oh.
So Selena was obsessed with the Madonna documentary and kept saying, I want him to do this new one. But at first he was like, no, because I don't want to do like a typical celebrity boring documentary. Like I want it to like push the boundaries and be subversive. And he went and shot with her for a few weeks. And then there was a scene where she was crying and she said, oh, I don't know if I want to include that. Like, I don't want my fans to see me break down. Then he was like, it's not the right time for us to work together in that case. And then came back to it. Then he went on with her to this Africa trip and realized, oh my God, no, there is actually a real story here about mental health and recovery that actually needs to be tapped into.
Did she have the final cut? Do you know?
I would imagine that she did, but alongside Alec Keshishan.
That's the director.
Yeah. Selena's really come up in my estimations from watching that documentary.
She's real,
She's so cute and just really
and
sensitive.
And also, I really loved her new like body positivity. Like she's
I
put
know.
On weight,
and she looks so great, doesn't she?
She looks so great. And people try to troll her for her bikini pictures, and she was like, I don't care. I love my body.
Although, you know, she is actually best friends with Nicola Peltz.
Well,
so maybe Nicola Peltz isn't that bad after all.
Maybe. Or maybe she's not really friends with her.
She was in all her birthday celebrations when they were on that yacht and dancing and stuff. There's where some of the pics of Selena and her swimming cosy were from.
Okay, well, maybe, look, if you have any intel, guys, on whether Nicola Peltz Beckham is actually really nice, please let us know.
Yes.
We'll and then we'll correct ourselves on the next episode if we think your evidence is plausible. So that's it,
honeys.
We
let us know if you've got any good recommendations.
Yes.
Love to hear them.
We do.
And as always, do rate, review and subscribe. I'm sorry to keep banging that drum, but we really, really need you guys to do it. And not many of you ever do. So if you could pass it over to a friend equally, that would be fantastic.
Yes.
Let us know what you want to hear next. Let us know of any celebs you've got on your radar that maybe we should be chatting to. Let us know what you think of Mae Muller, our fave.
We love her.
And yeah, see you next time, honey.
See ya.